Greetings, listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Story Never Ends, the podcast where we reread our favorite books and watch their adaptations and sometimes just watch our favorite shows. I'm Audrey.
And I'm Tinashe.
And this is one for the Bridgerton fans. So unless you're living under a cave, then you would have seen season two of Bridgerton, which came out last Friday, 25th of March, I believe. And we'll be doing a deep dive into season one and two later. But for now, we thought to give you a quick rundown of our thoughts of season two and all the goodness that it gave us. So let's dive in. Lady Mary, let's go. I'm totally giving away like your middle name anyway.
Is there anything to say other than I loved it? It was so good. And I loved it. I think I loved it more for the fact that it was Regency kind of storytelling.
Yep.
Especially starting with episode one and two. It took me a little while to get into it because I couldn't understand how they were telling the story compared to season one. But then yeah. It felt more like the way as the story unfolded, like it was kind of turning the pages of a novel.
Pretty much
like a Regency period novel, like, and it was so damn delicious, like it was so good. Yeah,
I mean, I back your sentiments all the way. I think we've been talking about, like, I guess to our listeners, just to give you a bit of context, we've talked about this show so many times since it came out, from the moment it came out to now. So when we do the deep dive, we'll relay more of those thoughts. But I guess just as a general thought thing, it was just more than I expected. I think I went in, season one context was, you know, you are being introduced to this new world and this idea of like interracial, not just couples, but interracial world, right? Like the world has no necessarily sense of color per se.
So it's just they're rich people of color, a high society people of color. And also they're also like, you know, servants there. Servants are also, you also have like, you know, also a mixture of white and black people and brown people in there as well. So it's a very diverse kind of casting and characters in there.
Pretty much. And I think that's what set it apart. And you just sort of go, you know, like, oh, this is an exciting world. Mm. But then when season one ended, I didn't really think much about what they could potentially give us more of. I just thought, oh, more of the same.
Yes.
But this was like more of the same, but more. I don't know if that means, like, as in, it was really good because of what Bridgerton season one already had offered. It was just building on that. But then they took one of our favorite tropes and they put it on the screen.
Tell us what is our favorite trope.
For anyone that doesn't know what a trope is, it's just like what a convention for like how couplings are done. Enemies to lovers. One of the biggest tropes ever. Think of Pride and Prejudice. Think of any story really where people do not like each other at the beginning of the story and end up loving each other or being in love or being somewhere in the middle of loving someone by the end. And I think even season one had the same sort of element. They were not enemies per se. This has just had a bit of difference at the beginning. And then they started faking their love. So then that one became more of a, what do you call it? The fake love.
Pretend relationship.
And fall in love. It wasn't exactly that. So then this one was a full-fledged, like, we don't like each other. We're going to kill each other. But so anyway, you can keep going on about the trope if you have any more.
I think I've, not trope per se, but like how many times I've watched this season. I'm currently on my second rewatch, but I'm kind of watching the episodes slowly and just, again, picking up on the scenes that I enjoyed of our main love story. Yes. And right now, just before we started, we're repeating another episode that I had watched yesterday. And it's just so good. Like,
you're picking up even more. Yeah.
So I'm assuming the audience we're speaking to already have watched Bridgerton and have watched season two. So spoilers if you have not, or just, you know.
Come
back to this after. So
definitely.
Kate Sharma. Ooh, this brown-skinned, dark-skinned Indian woman, like, she knows her mind. She she knows her goal. She knows what she wants to achieve. And at the moment, she's not thinking about love for herself. Although, do you think that at the back of her mind, she's like, if I do find somebody, I would, like, you know, let it happen?
Yeah, I think.
Because the way she then, remember how she, when they meet again, her and the Viscount, and she sees him at the dance the first dance, and she follows him outside.
Yes.
She follows him outside. It's not until there's a small smile on her face, like, oh, I'm encountering that guy that I saw in the park yeah. when we were racing. Yeah. There was some banter, there was some flirting yeah. and whatnot. And so initially, I think if she had not overheard the Viscount saying all that stuff, there might have been something yep. there. Definitely.
Yes. I think in a world of fan fiction, someone will probably write that at some point.
Ooh,
but
yes.
But in this context, you're right. Like, it goes from being meet cute, horse riding. Oh, yes. Who's this person? Yes. She doesn't even know who he is. So there's not that element of, because she obviously goes into this world wanting to seek someone for her sister, someone rich to fulfill her grandparent, her step grandparents, yes. whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when they meet, they don't have those barriers or
yep.
expectations, yep. which is really, really good. And I think you're right. When she actually initially goes out, and I have to rewatch that scene as well, she's very much curious to hear what he's saying. And then he says what he says and she's like,
she overhears.
Who yeah, are yes, you? Like, yeah, yeah, how did yeah. you turn into this monster? And she's, yes. she can't help but be enraged. But I think, so were you asking in terms of like when the love element?
No, or I was just saying like, that I think for her, like, I think she had actually considered that maybe for herself. I don't think she was thinking this man is a potential suitor mm-hmm. for my sister. But I think until that moment where she overhears him talking about, I just want a woman, like a woman who is amiable, who's is like, kind of breeding like, stock for my yeah, children yeah. and
meets like a certain requirement and that's
yes,
it.
Yes. Yeah. Until she heard that, I think she might have considered him for herself.
Yeah.
A small part of her, like, yeah, yeah, yeah. If she not overheard that. And it might have been a totally different story from there.
It definitely would have been. I mean, yeah. But it wasn't. And thank God it wasn't, because we could not have gotten all the tension. I mean, so I guess in some ways, let's just break down as we're doing this as a quick one. Yes. Let's do, I guess, our favorite moments and then at the end wrap up with like the other couples or storylines that were happening. So favorite moments in terms of Kate and Anthony, because they were the,
yes.
the key couple this yes, time, the yes, Viscount yes. and his Viscountess or yes. Viscountess yeah. to be for the most of the story. So background being Kate has come with her sister to get her married, mm-hmm. but we don't yet know. And we see her being a bit cagey at first. And I like how even at first, when you first see her, you're sort of like, why is she the way, like, you're sort of curious as to why she is the way she is. She's so, like, I always say this season reminded me of 10 Things I Hate About You, which is based on the Taming of the Shrew, Shakespeare, whatever. But the sister, for what is it called? For one of the characters to get to go on a date with the younger sister, he has to sort of like tame or what do you call it? Like get into the heart or the good graces of the older sister. So that's why they get her together with Heath Ledger's character or they try to. But similarly, Anthony is obviously like, this is the barrier. She's the gatekeeper to Edwina.
Yes, they actually do say.
Exactly. But then, as we talked about, the romance comes unexpectedly because then the guy she's totally against having her sister fall in love with is the guy that she ends up falling in love with.
And so it's so messy.
So messy. Also, yes. sisters, I could never do that to my sister, but I suppose it's a TV show, so we got to do what we got to do. So, yeah, what favorite moments, I suppose, in whatever order, I don't think.
In whatever order.
Yeah.
I hadn't actually considered this moment. I know you know my favorite moment. Probably you'll say it, but I hadn't actually considered this moment is a favorite moment until we spoke about it yesterday. This scene where he comes to the poetry reading and he goes to his brother Benedict first and he's like, you know, I'm not really for poetry. I don't even know how to say poetry. Like, can you teach me? Then Benedict gives him some words and he shows up to the poetry reading and he actually starts saying the poem. Then he just kind of stops and he's like, this is not me. And he goes on to state, like, you know, I'm not one for poetry. I think poetry is all pretty and lovely, but it's hollow words. And I promise you, he's very honest about his feelings and his intentions in a way. And until that moment, I don't think Kate kind of views him as anything other than the rake she knows about, guy she overheard speaking about having a wife who's just there to give birth to his children.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. He still wants that, but in this sense, he's saying, I won't be neglectful.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think that moment of vulnerability from him, of honesty, considering how we have that scene, I think in episode 2 where, or episode 1 where they go to the horses, mm-hmm. and Anthony uses his friend as his friend to kind of distract her so that he can get closer to the diamond of the season, Miss Edwina Sharma. But in that moment at the poetry reading, there's a sense of vulnerability that Kate sees, and suddenly I think she is kind of intrigued by what she sees. She is curious about who this man is, mm-hmm, even mm-hmm. though she's trying to fight it and she doesn't want to define it.
Yeah.
Cause but
do you think at that moment, though, she was feeling anything for him, or it's more she's starting to see him in a different light that shocks her because... That now part. Her sister,
yes,
is,
that part.
You know, because I think for me the B scene is what where Kate suddenly goes
definitely,
something might be happening now.
I think it grows from that part for me because when we then get to Aubrey Hall, mm-hmm. and she's just standing there looking at the house, and then Anthony comes over to her, like he can't see his intended.
Literally.
Well, not yet intended, but the one he's trying to, you know,
lure into the family.
Yes, yes. Just the banter there, just the way they look at each other.
Yeah.
I think it's just the build up to that bee scene, yes. If you want to talk about that, if that's one of your favorite moments.
I mean, that is definitely one of my favorite moments. And I think it's a favorite moment because of how, although you could almost think, oh, that's a bit sad that... they're connecting something that happened to his dad, such mm-hmm. a sad moment, to a potentially romantic moment.
Yeah.
It works because it's the first time that Anthony, as much as he's vulnerable at the poetry reading, that's more, what do you call it, aesthetic vulnerability. Like, yes. He's being genuine for Edwina, but nobody really knows the trauma he went through when his father died, outside of his siblings and his mom. But with this woman that he's barely knowing and barely getting to know, and he's panicking about this potential bee, because the context of the story is that his dad died having been stung by a bee, and, you know, back then there was no EpiPen, so he died.
Yes.
But when Kate then gets stung and then he's fearing what happens, the panic attack he gets, I don't know, there's something, do you remember Teen Wolf?
Yeah.
Styles used to get panic attacks, and Lydia was always the person that, well, she wasn't always, but she was one of the people that could draw him back and, like, not.
I barely remember that part because you know who I was.
Yeah, shipping. I know who you. Yes. You were on the other side of the pond. I was on the other side, but, you know. Either way, the idea of, like, panic attacks being used as, like, a point to connect couples, I always find that fascinating. It's a bit sick because people that actually get panic attacks, I'm sure they're like, it's not romantic at all. But in the context of romance.
The way she calms him down. Like,
she brings him back to the moment.
Puts his hand on her chest so that he can
hear her heartbeat. Yep. And her heart breathing. And I feel like it's close enough to the heart for you to be able to...
Because they start playing the heartbeat sound, like, as well. Yeah. Yes,
but they then end up breathing in sync, so the breathing in sync happens. You're right, and I think for me, just the fact that he didn't even realize he was becoming vulnerable because he's obviously panicking.
Yes,
but it's not it's a moment that then if you lead on to episode 4, which is what we were watching when they meet that first time at the tea, like when Edwina devises for them to go on the hunt, he's sort of maybe at first he's embarrassed, who knows, but he's also very much like, oh, that happened, like in terms of like. The feelings are catching.
Catching the feelings. Also, I think as an audience, you'd be asking yourself, considering what he's been saying all this time, like, why are you panicking?
Exactly. Like,
yes, you think that she's about to die, but the level of fear attached towards it, maybe he was having like a traumatic flashback, but also it wasn't just about thinking about his father in terms of that. Like, you were thinking about, Kate is about to die.
Yeah.
I'm about to lose Kate.
But do you think at that moment it was really just Kate as well? Like, Edwina. Maybe it had been anyone. Like, is it more so not his fear at that moment? Because I'm trying to separate in the sense that when she then, at the end of the season, collapses and he's fully in panic mode, like she might die. For me, that's when I can connect him saying, Kate is going to die. I'm going to lose her. In that moment, I feel like his concern just comes more from the idea of what that B did to his dad. Like, as in, it could have been anyone. It could have been
definitely like 60, 70, 80% of that was definitely a flashback.
Flashback
to that traumatic experience that he had.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a bit of that was also about Kate herself.
No, as in, now he's coming, especially when he comes back to the moment, as in when she's able to calm his heart and they're like looking at each other and it's like,
because then you then question, like, if it was mostly about his dad, like, why is there all that face, like, you know, his forehead is against her forehead, their nose is a nubbling, they're almost about to kiss,
God, like, the romantic, you know, there's nothing better than, I think people don't understand that Regency, or not even Regency, but period pieces, especially Regency period pieces, because they're obviously of a time when rules and whatever of how to touch, how to approach, how to, you know, they, people were speaking in metaphors. They wouldn't just come to you and be like, I like you. They'll be like, you know, I admire the way you're blah, 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 blah. And that says I like you. You know, it's not just straight up and like we are now. So I think a lot of people, the reason why maybe they might find it hard to get into Regency romance is like the fact that it's not just explicit.
I think those people enjoy particularly season one of Bridgerton.
Because it is more explicit. Yes. But even in its explicitness, there is still the idea of...
I'm not just talking explicitness in just in terms of sex or anything, but in just being open about how they are feeling.
Yes, like, they are a bit more open. Yeah. Obviously, there's the push and pull with Simon and his dad or whatever, but it's nothing like this. In this one, literally, even when he proposes to her, like, she's still like, this guy doesn't like me. Like, he just wants me for obligation, and I want to love, blah, 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 blah. It's like, but either way, like, I guess going down our favorite moments as well, as you know, for me, the leg. The leg. The thigh, I should say.
This man acted like she just, you know, showed her whole body or something. And it's just a piece of thigh, like a flesh of a thigh. This man in season one was sleeping with any and everybody. Exactly. Season two, same thing. Like,
literally. And so I guess to lead on, it's before the bee. Oh, I mean, it's after the bee. But they've gone for the hunt. Kate is being stubborn as usual, which turns him on like crazy, I'm sure. But at this time, he's still denying it. I mean, they both, one likes giving orders and obviously gets turned on if they don't get turned, they don't get, you know, and then the other one doesn't like getting orders but gets turned on and they get given.
It's like a direction I did not even imagine. I didn't even think about that.
I mean, at the end, they literally say, you and your orders. And he's like, go inside. So obviously, her not listening and him giving her orders.
Yes.
Fireworks. Hello. Yes. Hello. Yes. But yeah, I didn't even realize I was going to say that either. But what I love about that scene is, it's just like you said, it's literally, he's seen many women's bodies.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the woman he's starting to grow feelings for, catch feelings for. And she just lifts her dress. And I don't even think she realized, because she's not looking down herself. Yes. She's just sort of looking up at him walking. And unfortunately, she lifts it a bit too high and her thigh shows. But he literally gets thrown. Like, he's talking to her and now he's just like...
He immediately like his jaw clamps shut and she's talking as she's walking past. And I don't think that man heard a thing. He did not, even when he starts talking, replying to her, he is saying disjointed words and I don't think it even makes sense that he's just walking past and not making eye contact.
And he walks away frustratedly, but yeah, that was funny for me. I don't know, it just was so interesting how, I guess people have been praising, I guess we'll talk more about the actors as well at the end, but they've just been praising how Jonathan Bailey did his scenes and was the romantic lead.
Mm.
And I think partly it's because of how expressive he is. That kind of helped. I feel like, unlike Simon was more of a look and see and get everything from looking and see. As in, like, he's a handsome guy. He gives you what he gives you.
But is he not more like... I'm doing, like, you know, a body gesture. But like, is... emotions, are they not more controlled? Like,
you mean Simon?
Yeah, like he holds his emotions really close.
Yeah,
like even when he was telling her, like, telling Daphne, like, the first, so when they get married and then they get to the inn and, and they're in the separate rooms, and
he's like, I'm burning for you,
yes, and like he's expressive in his own way, but it's very controlled way.
He's compared to
the Viscount.
Yeah, I think Anthony's definitely more of a fire, and the Duke is more of like ice, I suppose, if you're trying to compare that. Yeah. Both are extreme in their forms, but Yeah. One is just more like, yeah, that's going to get you.
You know what? That's just, I like that.
I don't know. I got that from somewhere. I don't think it's an original thought, but yeah.
Fire and ice.
Definitely. There is
a poem like by Robert Frost called Fire and Ice. Like the world will end in either fire and ice or something like that. Yeah.
But in both are like extremes in some ways. Yes. So yeah, yes. That makes sense. So yeah, what's your other, so we can, you know, get the moments going?
Okay. The scene when they're dancing, honestly, like Audrey was saying as we're watching it, that I don't think they were even allowed to touch like that. But that scene was fire. So Edwina gets it into her head that the reason why Anthony hasn't proposed is because him and Kate don't get along. So she gets them to spend time together, and that's how that hunting
moment happens,
and also this dance scene. So they're on the dance floor. So the idea is that Kate is gonna ask her, or kind of ask Anthony, or prompt him, like, what are your intentions with my sister? So whilst they're dancing, it comes up that Kate is planning to leave, go back to India once her sister is married. And oh my God, Mr. Anthony Bridgerton, Viscount Anthony Bridgerton, he is thrown. He cannot believe. He's like, are you gonna leave? Are you going to abandon your sister? And Kate is like, no, I'm not abandoning my sister. She's married. She would have been married by then. Therefore, she's with family. And Anthony cannot take it. He storms off. And hey, the Daphne element in this, this woman is seeing everything, and she knows what is happening with her brother. Like, honestly, like, she can really tell that Anthony has got more feelings for Kate than he does Edwina. Anyway, so they storm off. Anthony storms off, and Kate follows, and they're in the study. And, man... I don't know. Can we play this in, or can we do this after? Because right now it's
probably just, for the breakdown. Yes, yeah, we can do. Okay, I hadn't queued it up, so by the time I find it.
No, that's fine. So they're arguing in the study. He goes on about, why are you leaving? Is it you don't want me to marry your sister? Because you don't like me? Why do you hate me? Tell me why. And his voice. His voice, it kind of breaks when he's asking, why do you hate me? Is that it kind of thing? And then it goes from angsty to seducing it's so natural, so organic, but it happens so quickly. You're kind of thrown off like, oh my God, yes, yes, yes. Is he talking to me? Like,
he was talking to every woman.
He was talking to every woman.
The interesting part is, he's so, because for me, it's more like, at that moment, he hasn't yet decided, obviously, Edwina is the one. Because that's why at the dinner scene, he pivots. Because he gets cold feet, because he can see Kate right there. And he's like, there's still something with Kate. I'm not yet committed to this woman.
Yes.
There's still something with this woman. Yes. So by the time they go to the dance, there's still the possibility that he could do something.
Because he asked her at the dance, like, should I
reconsider?
Yes.
Exactly. But I think when then she says the India thing, he's like, wait, what? I thought I had time to at least... think.
That part, that he thought that he had time, yes.
And he doesn't have time.
No.
And she's like, I'm out. So if he proposes to Edwina, she's out. But if he doesn't...
He's got still, more time with her.
But then if he doesn't as well, she potentially will be now like still... The fighting won't be more so romantic tension. It'll be like, why are you keeping my sister, like, you know, not in the know, if that makes sense. She'll become more of his enemies. Like, he was standing to lose either way. Like, if he married her, she's gone.
Yes.
But if he doesn't marry her and keeps delaying, she keeps putting pressure on him and potentially, anyway, it's just interesting how you can read so much subtext with all the stuff that was going on.
Subtext was king this season.
and because I was looking for something, I just wanted to see if anyone comments on, he asks if she wants him to reconsider, and he's saying, so he accuses her of doing, I'm reading a review, by the way, on Vulture. So I'm just trying to figure out that line when he's like, why are you keeping me away from your sister? It's a deflection that he does, which is really weird.
It's the random thing that he says because she says, I'm going back to India. And then he's like, are you not going to find a match of your own? And she's like, "It's, I don't think that's any of your business."
Yeah.
Then he says, like, are you trying to keep me away from your sister? And it completely doesn't answer what she's saying.
Yeah. Actually, this one doesn't break down, but yeah, it sort of touches on it, but it doesn't break down like what that could have been the understanding of. But like we said, I think it's a deflection more than it was.
Because it deflects a lot in this scene.
He definitely does. Yeah. He definitely. So I guess leading on to the, you know, closed door scenes, one of my other favorite ones, not that mine, but both of us, is the episode 5 scene where...
You're the bane of my existence. Hey, have you ever had... Your partner, your boyfriend, or someone who you're interested in saying that, you know, you're the bane of my existence and you instantly melt? Like, who does that? Because you're the bane of my you're the bane of my existence and the object of my desire. Like, Lord help me. Like,
I know.
And that's not even where it starts. It's a whole freaking scene. The whole scene is so fraught with tension. With intimacy, with heat, with everything. Unresolved sexual tension is like, it's just unresolved emotional tension.
There's a scene, I was trying to find it to cue, but hey, people can find it, I suppose. Twitter, wherever, if you just type "bane of my existence," I'm sure the clip will come up, right? Where they strip the audio. And that's
you
where...
You can't find it?
No, I can't find it on the thing. Anyway, I suppose if I had it on my thing, I would have queued it up, but... I'll try to, whilst I'm talking, sorry. It was just showing our audience that we haven't prepared properly. But anyway,
But you can go to your WhatsApp.
Yeah, I'm just finding it, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So in that scene, I think what I found interesting was most of the time you wonder why actors win awards, right? Like you're like, oh yeah, this actor was awarded, whatever. But if Jonathan Bailey, whether he's to win an Emmy or whatever award he got nominated, I would understand why he would have got it nominated. Yes. Like, he was acting the hell out of this season. Like, he was acting, like, his facial expressions, his voice, his body movements.
Yes.
His expressions, the way he reacts to things, and especially his reactions. I think acting is not about just portraying the emotion, but, like, how you react to someone else saying something to you. Like, this is why I did not want to do the WhatsApp connection, because now it's like...
Like, even the quiet moments, too, like, when he, like... Of course, it's direction. And sometimes actors decide to do this, like, with how they understand the character. Like, even the more quiet moments where he's whispering in her ear, like, going closer to her. And just like, you know, do you know all the ways that a woman could be seduced? The things I could
teach
you.
I found it. I found the scene. Like, I found the scene.
Mercy, please. Mercy.
So... Yeah, we're about to play the scene. I think that's the only way we can do it. Just play the scene.
That's not going to do it justice, honestly.
Exactly. Yeah, so I'll cue it up.
You're the bane of my existence.
I'm sorry. I will. I love this scene too much. Can you restart it? I apologize.
Object of all my desires.
And you'll be a bit quieter?
Yes, I will be.
Night and day. You're the bane of my existence. And the object of all my desires. Night and day, I dream of you. And what I... Do you even know all the ways a lady can be seduced? The things I could teach you.
I wish I'd taken a picture of Jay. Or a video of her solemnizing.
Even that last, like that exhale of breath. Exactly. Like, I felt it too right now. Like, I felt it too. Like, exactly. I was like,
and literally the way following that, where he exhales as well, like after he's like about to kiss her, but he's just like, I can't, like,
I can't
do it. But it's just, there was just, it just, I couldn't.
Even the part, I wish
I couldn't.
We'll do it more when we're doing this in depth, and I feel like we're. But the part where she repeats again that she is leaving, she's going back to India, and he's like, "Do you think that's far enough?" like to ease my torment. Do you think you could ever go far enough? Is there even far enough on this earth for you to go to where I wouldn't even think of you? Kind of thing.
No way. And can you imagine that? Like, where in the world would you
hear
anyone? Exactly. Like, say you can't live here. Because yeah. I'm just going to think about you. Because it's more the idea of like existing. You just existing means I am always going to think about you. Like,
yes.
Yeah, I'm just always going to think about you. And I guess
for me, that's my ultimate number one scene. That's my favorite
scene. I would say for me, the contender would definitely also be then in episode 7 when they're doing more of the, not love confession, but it's the pre-love confession. So they're in the gazebo wherever and you stop or whatever. And it's sort of like, that's when they're fully sort of, Kate also, that's when she says her piece or her part about like what she feels about him. Because I think leading before that, when the wedding, oh my God, can we talk about the wedding?
That wedding was messy.
Can we talk about because yeah, before we get Mr. to my other favorite
Anthony
moment.
Anthony Bridgerton was messy. Both of them were, definitely, but this man is getting married to Miss Edwina Sharma, the youngest Sharma sister. Kate has helped to facilitate this wedding to come to fruition. Yeah? But Anthony Bridgerton, when Kate comes through, she's of course the maid of honor. She comes through and Anthony cannot keep his eyes off of her. And then we're now at the wedding. At the part where they're exchanging vows. And guess who Anthony is looking at? He's looking at Kate. He even impeaches her in a wedding dress. And then there's the, like, when the, so Kate is wearing bangles, bracelets.
Yeah.
And they fall to the floor. Please tell the audience what Mr. Anthony Bridgerton does.
He could have left.
Anthony, apparently. Yes, Anthony yes. Bridgerton does.
The Viscount, we the shall Viscount. Call him
then. Tell the audience instead of what letting this man does.
Colin or maybe all the other servants around.
Or her. Kate can
exactly.
pick up,
she pick was up already, the bracelets.
She was already getting down exactly. onto the floor to pick them up. Then she's like, what? What does he say?
Please allow me. And he proceeds to get them. And he almost wants to put them back on her wrist in that moment.
But and I think, I don't know if he realizes or it's Kate who realizes, because it's almost like putting a ring on her.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but no, I don't think he puts it back on her though. Yeah, yeah. He wants to. He's definitely tempted. It's a sad moment because obviously, like I said, the sister dynamic of them is sad because obviously you don't want to hurt your sister. So she's hurting her sister in the process. But it's just an interesting scene because it's like, I just never expected that scene to happen. Like in a million moments in terms of how that could have happened. And also it's in a way, it kind of gets rid of the need for us to see them having a wedding, right? Because he does envision her in a wedding. So in some ways, we kind of already get an idea of like them in wedding clothes, yes, if that yes, makes sense, yeah, to yeah. satisfy those people
but
that might be like,
give
oh,
us
we want to see.
Keys at the altar.
Exactly.
Anywhere.
Like they're literally standing and...
Yes. Yes.
So beautiful. But then, I guess the wedding, we'll break it down properly when we do. But I was just going to say then, what about that moment when now Edwina has found out and they're at the Lady Danbury's house and they're devising how to keep them apart.
Yes.
And the dog comes in and he just gets distracted by her because he's just so close to her. And
yes.
Lady Danbury's like, stay away from each other because it's just the chemistry is yes. too much. And the way he smells her or whatever, I know that sounds weird to say for people that might just be listening going, I have not watched this and why are you saying this? But tell me, Tinashe, how does he smell her?
This man was like... I like this Twitter post by what's that author's name?
The author that I said,
yes,
or Bolu Babalola.
Yeah, she describes him like an animal, like you know, like so
sniffing things.
Yeah, yeah, animalistic kind of behavior, and that's how I saw it. Because at first it threw me off, but then I kept on rewinding back to the scene. I'm like, do I like it? Do I not like it? I kind of like it. And it's something that he's very expressive. He's very, the way he acts. So whether with his body or with his eyes or with his words, and it's just so is it visceral?
Yeah.
You've heard of it?
Yeah. Yes. No, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. You can feel every moment. And I guess so that we can, you know, get to the end of this and then we can leave for the little bit. So what, I guess, final five favorite moment and final thoughts sort of like so that we can wrap up and...
My final favorite moment. I think it kind of comes in with and also like my kind of thoughts towards the end of this season. Like the fact that I felt like that last episode should have gotten at least 30 to 40 minutes of them.
Or be two episodes, like, you know, episode eight and nine.
Because
yeah.
we were dealing with a lot of other storylines. They wanted to, what do you call it?
Wrap up.
And therefore, we didn't get as much of them. But I think one of my thoughts was like, can I just see... Yes, we did see Kate with the Bridgerton family, but can I just see her again with the Bridgerton family now, the Viscountess? And we got that, and I was so happy. I think that scene at the end, even when they're in bed, but more so the scene when they're just outside and they're now playing again Pall Mall, and it's a full cycle. Full circle. You were saying some of the things did start there.
Yeah, it did. That's where most of the romantic tension. Before that, it was sort of just like Anthony probably trying to figure her out. Like, who's this woman? Why is she so difficult? Whatever. Yes. She's like a thorn in my side. She's in my way. But then at Aubrey Hall, that's really when it goes. And I think, I guess, final favorite moment without being too explicit, but when they're, like I said, episode 7, when they're in the gazebo and he says, go inside.
I'm sorry.
Like, he literally just says, please go inside it first. And he's trying to say it as patiently as he can. Because I guess context wise, they've just been expressing all this stuff about each other. And he's like, it's more of an extension of the bane of my existence scene, but they're just being more explicit ish this time. He's talking about like, had the lilies and smelling the lilies and stuff. And he's like...
Well, he does?
He definitely is like, the scent. Because actually what leads on to that is just before that, the women are in the bath. Yes. If you remember? And her mom tells her to like use the soap, the lily soap for something. A good little connecting thread there. But they're talking, and then he's like, you must stop. And obviously he's expressing that, you know, she must stop causing this feelings for him. And then she's like, you must stop, blah, blah, blah. I feel these things for you. Yeah. You must stop. And then he's just like, please go inside, because he starts realizing he wants to do things to her. And then she doesn't listen. And he says, go inside. And she still doesn't listen. And then what happens? It's too explicit for this podcast. I won't say it. But you know what my favorite scene was just after
that. What happens, happens.
But anyway, that's, I guess, is to add on to what you said. Yes, the final episode could have had a better wrap up. I think in some ways... the thread of stories was too much to try to wrap up in like one episode like that. That we then kind of lost out on what we got with Daphne, where they did have, they didn't necessarily have the blissful, they didn't really have like a lot of after the realization scene. Like, you know, when she has, it sort of cuts to 1 year later and she's already having the baby.
Yeah.
So yeah, we didn't really get that, but we got more of them as a couple anyway, sort of, even though they were faking. They're not faking, but they were still thinking they were one thing, but they hadn't yet fully realized their love, more so than Anthony and Kate, who we got to see then as a couple, but it was like at the end. So the good thing is, I actually just saw right now, apparently season 3 and 4, they're coming back. So you'll get to see the Viscount and his Viscountess. So yeah, definitely. But yeah, we'll be doing more of that breakdown, right, for season 1 and 2. I don't know if we'll do it episode by episode or chunks of episodes or... One season is one whole episode. We'll see. But, you know, keep an eye out. And, yeah, I don't know. Do you have anything more to say regarding that or even shows to recommend that you found since Bridgerton season 2?
I don't think I found anything. You know when you get into that rut after watching something so good. And you're trying to find something similar to that or something like that. And there's nothing that fills the hole. I've tried reading fan fiction. I think there was that one I sent to you, but then it also involves Sophia, and I was getting
it just
more
wasn't,
of Sophia. I couldn't get into it, so I stopped. And so I actually did read one that kind of extends from the bane of my existence, where they kind of have
the explicit.
They have relations in the room.
Carnal relations.
Yes. And so I haven't found anything. So
yeah, this was a definitive what is it called? Enemies to lovers, in the sense that, like, remember what I told you? Pride and Prejudice is like having a mocktail. Lovers, enemies to lovers, because you don't get the explicitness a bit more, and there's too many other side characters to sort of distract from the main couple.
Yes, yeah.
But this one, it's like your proper cocktail. You're getting the looks and the touches and the thingies and the thingies. But I think it's also off its time, because obviously Pride and Prejudice was what started that.
Yes.
But now we can take more liberties with this world. Yes, this is not what they did. They would have never danced fully touching each other like that. I mean, not never, but I don't think as many dances allowed for that. Yeah, they were very constructed and everything.
I suppose the waltz.
Yes.
But the waltz back then was viewed as a very, maybe a dance that couples do, like married couples do.
Exactly.
It was very viewed much, not that just married couples, but it was viewed like a very intimate dance.
Mm. And I think it also evolved. Yeah. The version they would have done then, I don't think was as evolved then. Like, as in, I feel like over the years until, I think maybe the 1800s or something, when it sort of hit the version we know now. This is me just conjecture from what I've read from other places. But I think the intimacy of the waltz itself has evolved over time, as in become more. And that's why there's the Viennese waltz and the whatever, like the names for it.
Oh, you know the type.
I don't really know the types. I'm just types using waltz, my movie knowledge.
Yes.
But anyway, the idea being like, they have taken a lot of liberties that have allowed a modern audience to come in. If you want just your traditional period drama, you can find it on the BBC.
Yes.
But if you want a little bit more,
yes. I was thinking of another Enemies to Lovers, Mr. Thornton and...
Yes. And that's... Oh, my God. And Lucy Hale?
I don't know if it's Lucy, but it's Miss Hale. Yes, from the... Northern South.
That one is a torturous.
And the other thing with the problem with that one as well, I want more of them than the other side story. The other side story should just kind of feed into it.
Yeah.
But I wanted more of them as well. So when I read fan fiction from that, I get more.
There is fan fiction,
and it's pretty good.
Okay, yeah, I would definitely, because, Elizabeth, unfortunately, the thing is also, it was a commentary on society at the time. She wasn't out here just writing romance like the rest of us want her to, but her romance was very good.
Yes,
drawn and
absolutely.
Anyway, let's wrap up, guys. Yes. Like you said, we'll be doing a full breakdown of the seasons, and hopefully by the time we do that, there's been more stuff said and we can take more and analyze more and break it down more and listen to scenes more with headphones.
Yes.
Highly recommend listening to those scenes with headphones, because the way the voices, everything, just... So anyway, MVP, Jonathan Bailey. Second MVP, you know, Simone Ashley. And the rest of the cast.
I'm glad you actually knew her name.
I was like, Kate Sharma. I was going to say Kate Sharma. I was going to say Kate Sharma, so close. But then I was like, oh, what's it? Simone Ashley. Yep, yes. Let's do it. And also, even the Duchess, let's not forget her. Shout out to, you know, the Daphne, whatever her actress's name is, in the sense that she was definitely us in that show. Like,
yes. She stood for the audience. Yes.
Yeah. She was looking like,
I see you.
She's not Edwina, but you went. Anyway, it's interesting. We'll talk about it more later. But I guess that's it for this episode of The Story Never Ends. We'll catch you guys a little bit later.
You're the bane of my existence.